A brand new children's book is out, entitled The Lost Forest, and it takes us inside the story of a lucky error that preserved 144 acres of old-growth red and white pine in Minnesota. Phyllis Root is the author, and Betsy Bowen is the illustrator, and Betsy's here live in the Roadhouse to talk about the new book, The Lost Forest. Thanks so much for coming in, Betsy.
My pleasure.
I don't know that I've ever had you on the Roadhouse before.
No, maybe not this version anyway.
We certainly know the name. Betsy Bowen has been the Cook County Grand Marais artist for so many years. Betsy, what's like the brief history of your existence here as an artist?
Me in the county? Yeah. I came first with my family of origin, and when I was a younger teenager, about 1960, and we visited vacationed, you know, maybe a couple times a year in different seasons from Chicago. And my parents, especially my mother, really had a heart for the wilderness. Her father was a forest ranger in Michigan, and she just took some initiative to find a place where I still live, and bought this old homestead in 1963, I resonated with it, having been to Girl Scout camp since I was 10, which was like the first year I could possibly go. I was chomping at the bit by then. And so my three boys have grown up here. Jeremy lives here now, currently, and the other two are in Minnesota as well. And it's pretty great. You know, I'm quite attached to it here.
Well, it's the nature, it's the natural world, and the forests and the lakes and so yes, your art has always done such a good job of presenting that in such a whimsical way. Woodblock, okay. I think, is your
that's my
specialty.
Primary medium. Yes,
but you also illustrate books.
Yes,
and The Lost Forest is the new book out with Phyllis Root. I understand you gals have worked together in the past.
Yes, this is the fourth book we've done together. Other books have also been about the Minnesota natural places too, the bog and the prairies and the overview of the various biomes in the state.
Well, how does a project like this get started? Who came up with this idea?
Phyllis has been, she's been roaming around the state for some years now and was going to do a book, really, which was, I think, like the One North Star book that both of us worked on, and as well, Becky Prangy from Ely. And it's descriptions, very poetic, lyrical descriptions by Phyllis of these different biomes in the state. And as she was traveling around putting together this book, she was so entranced by the just special places that she went to, Big Bog in the northern part of the state and the prairie. And so she focused some books just on those special places. And The Lost 40 is one of the things that came out of her journey around the natural world of the state.
Okay. So sounds like her idea.
Yes. So she wrote a manuscript, presented it to the University of Minnesota Press, with whom she's done other books, including the three previous books that I also worked on. And they approached me about illustrating it. And that's a common way, for me anyway, that book projects will result. It'll be a publisher with a manuscript, and then they'll be looking for an illustrator.
So it was, you could react to the manuscript, you had the ideas.
Right. Yep. So that it's that's been not the only way, but typical for me of having a manuscript, and I might never know the author. In this case, Phyllis and I had met years previous to this at a youth writer conference, I believe it was. Anyway, that's my recollection, and thought, wouldn't that be fun? She's a lovely person. She's very engaging and lighthearted.
Oh, you know,
nice.
Looking at her bio and the number of awards she's won and yes. The number of children's books, I can't imagine She's just got to be the best
yes,
at what
very
she does.
Warm and curious and a fine writer.
Okay, so The Lost Forest takes us inside of a history here. Kids' book, children's book, I don't see it as that. I see it as like a historical and a natural guide. And if you could just tell us the story of this, of what happened. How did this 144 acres of old growth endure?
Yes, as you were saying a few minutes ago, the particulars of this were new to me. I knew about the Gunflint Pines. I think we all, have a heart for the Gunflint Pines, which is old growth pine trees. They're just big and wonderful. And up the trail, in particular, previous to the blowdown, those old growth trees, just huge, huge, hundreds of years old, are just really endearing. So in this particular case, though, there was a surveying effort that crossed the U.S. In the case of this particular story, in 1882, there was a crew of surveyors headed by the main guy, Josiah King, who screwed up the map.
They made a mistake.
They did. It happens.
And I love it how you had some reasonings. Perhaps they were cold. Perhaps they were hungry.
Yes. We don't know. To imagine, what was it like to do,
We all make mistakes.
They had no GPS. They had no Google Maps. This is way, way back before that. And it's surprising maybe that it's as useful as it is, that surveying, to the way we think of land now.
Oh, it's fundamental.
All gridded.
It's that whole section, quarter section, acres.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the history lesson that was so eye-opening for me, was that this is how the America was divided up and sold off.
Right. Land was, as I was reading up a little bit about the history of the measurement of land, in Britain and Europe, it was land was sold on it based on units of productivity. And an acre, how many potatoes would it grow? How many people's lives would it support? And this was in an agrarian age. And then that was kind of a unit of, what could a man produce in a day? That's what an acre was the unit of land that could be worked by one guy and an ox in a day, I think, something like that. That was the sense of the measurement. And then somebody figured out how to translate that value into just measurement. Not the part between the stream and the big tree and going up to the other creek. Not that way, but in measurable units. And so there was a guy named Gunter that invented a chain that was 66 feet long and made up of 100 links. And those were divided into subsections so that two guys, each on the end of this chain, could walk along and measure how many chains and figure out the acreage from that. That's very specific. And so then land could be sold in square feet, so to speak, just by the actual numerical measurement.
And it had that same commodity approach. It looked like initially these were, these new maps of new land to buy and own and harvest and, manage were going out east, and timber barons were sizing things up and looking at clearing the land. And so when you look at a map and it shows a lake instead of a forest, it got left alone. But for 75 years.
Right. Nobody figured it out.
The impressive piece. I could see them, back in 1882, letting it go for 20, maybe 30 years. But certainly the neighbors must have noticed.
Right. If there were neighbors.
This was kind of in the middle of nowhere. This is in the Chippewa National Forest. I can't even picture the little town next to it. Was it Black Duck or something?
Yes. I can't even quite tell you, too. I had to roam around a little bit and when I first was looking.
Have you visited the forest?
Yes.
And what's it like?
Oh, it's lovely. It's there's a very simple, kind of gravel parking lot with space for a few cars to get off the road, and then a trail that is maybe a mile long and very minimally signed with informational signs. It makes kind of a loop through the forest. It's hilly, so you walk uphill, and then you can see. There is some lake and wetland there, quite pretty, but it's much smaller than what was there. And the surveyor's notes as well said that there is no pine timber on this section. Well, it'd be what? Not a whole section, a quarter section, but I was super intrigued to see that you can look up, like anybody can do this, look up the actual notes. You can page through the note surveyor's spidery handwritten notebook. There's a couple pages in the back of the book.
Yeah, in the back, in the appendix, yeah.
Yep. And because all these notes were taken by hand, they were just walking around with simple tools out there in the woods. And it actually can read, there's a description.
Best pine. Yeah. It's such a bonus. So this book is, it's amazing story in the beginning, great illustrations by Betsy Bowen. But then the supplemental education piece in the back, what lives in an old growth forest, and then what does the surveyor wear, and where are his tools? And that really, it adds such complexity and such history to the book. It's so valuable. Mm-hmm. It's such it's almost like a, for the schools perhaps,
I think so.
Environmental classes and measuring the land, stuff that you just don't think about in the daily life. So a great bonus, Betsy. We're speaking with Betsy Bowen. She's the illustrator of the new book, The Lost Forest, collaborated with Phyllis Root. Betsy's planning on being at Drury Lane tomorrow night at 5 p.m. for signing, perhaps?
Yes, and I will say, you mentioned, the sort of fun facts like, well, what did they wear and stuff. I have put together a semblance of a surveyor outfit from 1882. I did happen to find recently that the first women surveyors were noted in the U.S. anyway in 1917 out west. And the pictures I saw of the women had outfits quite a lot like the men did in 1882, I must say. They all had this hat, like this hat with a brim. It's super cool. So when I was working on the book, I found something that looked similar and thought of it as my thinking cap.
Nice.
So I will have my thinking cap on tomorrow at Drury Lane, along with the other pieces that I can manage to show of my version of a surveyor outfit from 1882.
So this is intriguing. Now, you wore this hat as you were illustrating?
Did it
get you into the spirit and into
Absolutely.
The mood? I love it.
Thinking caps, that's not fiction.
And did you have flannel underclothes on?
We're not talking about underwear, actually. However, what you will be able to see, I can talk about.
Oh, Betsy, I love it. And I'm sure you can talk like a surveyor, right? You can explain what a bearing tree is and a tally pin and all sorts of.
I'll do my best.
Terminology.
I'll do my best. When I was growing up, my dad was a civil engineer, and he also had a surveyor's license. So I remember his brass transit. It was the same at that point, which was in the 50s. 1950s and 60s, the gear that he used was apparently the same as what they use now. It was before any digital cool stuff that we have now that surveyors use. And I would go with him as a little kid and hold up the pole that had the numbers, and then he would be further down the road with his brass transit and sighting through the numbers. And I remember just that magic of being a kid, and when the moon was out at a certain point, when you'd see the shadows that kind of like half moon, where you'd see the shadows across the craters, he would set up the transit, then he'd come get us to come look. It was the best, just the best.
Ah, so there's history there.
Yep, it resonated.
In the blood.
Yes.
Well done, Betsy. What are some of the takeaways here? I mean, this is a, I think there's a story inside of a story here about land and nature and Mother Nature, and can it be measured? Can it be tamed? What do you think?
Well, I think that was very gracefully put by Phyllis, that you know, birds don't have borders and property lines, and people didn't either before Western people decided that, oh, we must have these things, you know, we must try to make this varied, textured, you know, beautiful, curvy land into square corners. We have to come up with square corners. Well, it's kind of a mismatch in a way, but it's certainly the way we operate now, you know, and hopefully, you know, hopefully there's a way of thinking, you know, with ever more respect about the, you know, the land, the, these, you know, imaginary but legal borders that divide, you know, the space that I say I own from the space that my neighbor, you know, considers that he owns, and that we can, you know, enjoy the fact that the birds flit right across there, and that hopefully we won't obstruct them. Hmm.
The Lost Forest was found, so it was in 1958. Nobody's quite sure who figured it out, but that's when things got discovered. And then this is now in part of the National Forest Service.
It's
preserved. It's a national forest. And it's known as the Lost 40, even though it's 144 acres. Any history there?
The current local custom, I guess, has always been to call it the Lost 40.
Kind of like the Back 40.
Like the Back 40, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, and so they used that as their thing. It's on the sign, it says National Forest Point of Interest.
I'll say.
Point of Interest. So that's apparently
a
classification.
Acres. And so this is now less than 2% of the state of Minnesota is in old growth status.
Yes.
Very special spot. Any other errors that came? Does any examples this happen elsewhere in the state? In your
Hovland,
okay,
has very wacky property lines. Apparently, my friends Ken and Molly Hoffman lived locally and worked as surveyors for quite many years. And Ken apparently did a good bit of research going back to the old notes to try to sort out where exactly the property lines were, because they were crooked. Molly was telling me recently that they would skip from one point to another, and instead of making the corner, it would be like a connect the dots angle from one dot to the other, but having skipped the corner dot. So I remember Wayne Henschy is another local surveyor. I believe he was Forest Service, who spent a lot of time, particularly the Hovland area, for some reason had very troublesome
inconsistent
lines. Yeah. Inconsistent. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That eventually some of them caused a bit of trouble.
It's because it's so wild up there.
It's wild. It's wild land everywhere, really.
You just can't square it up. You can't measure it in 66 feet at a time. So yep. that chain, I mean, it just doesn't lay flat in the hills and over the woods. And
no.
Amazing. Amazing. Yep. The Lost Forest is out. It's with the University of Minnesota Press.
Yes.
It's Betsy Bowen illustrating and Phyllis Root authoring. And Betsy's going to be at Drury Lane tomorrow celebrating Independent Bookstore Day and signing and posing in the surveyor's hat.
Absolutely.
At 5 p.m.
So yes.
Your chance to get a signed edition of the new Lost Forest and really a beautiful book, Betsy.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you.